My name is Jeff Archie, and thank you for joining us once again on this broadcast.
As tonight we will consider God's desire and qualifications for an eldership. This subject being assigned to me is a wonderful subject, Titus 1, 5 through 16. To assist me tonight with the presentation, I'm going to go directly into the lesson, because we do have a lot to cover tonight. We want to look at qualifications for elders. That's a sermon by itself. We want to look at applications of elders. What are elders to do? Then we want to look at the congregation's effort to support their elders. All three of these are supported by God's desire. The qualifications we will look at, God's desire. The application for elders and what they are to do, God's desire. For how congregations are to assist and to encourage their elders, God's desire. And if we will carry forth God's desire, then we know that our lives will be blessed, our churches will be encouraged, and we will be able to reach others with the gospel message. Tonight, by breaking this down, first of all, I want you to notice with me, first of all, God's desire at the qualifications. Not only do we find them here in Titus chapter 1, verses 5 through 9, but also in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 7. And also we must refer to the shepherd Paul, or rather the shepherd, the elder Peter, in 1 Peter 5, 1 through 4. And when we look at these qualifications, we realize these are what God has laid down for men who desire to serve as elders. To the young man Titus, he told him that he wanted him to set things in order that are wanting, and to ordain elders in every city as I had appointed thee. It is important that through God's desire things are set in order. And tonight let's consider just a moment of the qualifications of the elders. Would you take all three of these texts, and if I mention in the next few moments chapter 3, I'm referring to 1 Timothy, chapter 1, book of Titus, chapter 5, book of 1 Peter. But when you look and consider, there are 23 qualifications men are to meet before they serve as elders. I want to break them down this way tonight. I want to break it down, number one, and say, let's look at the heart of the man who will serve as an elder. Let's look at qualifications that deal with that man's heart. First of all, that man, first and foremost, according to chapter 3, should desire the work. He is one that will desire it, and he will not take the office reluctantly. Peter, in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 2, stated that he is taking the oversight thereof, not by constraint, but willingly of a ready mind. It's been said that if a man does not desire the office of the elder, the first qualification takes him out of the running, and that is so true. He must have the heart to do that. He must be a man of good behavior. His life must be well ordered. It must be in a good, structured, faithful manner. He can't be a recent convert. He can't be one who, according to chapter 3, verse 6, a novice. He must have that experience. The word defined there means he's not recently planted. He is a strong-rooted individual, and one who has been called by God through obedience to His will as one who is holy. One who is not only set apart, but set apart for God's purpose. He has a life that is devout, a very pious life. He's pleasing to God. He is undefiled by sin. The man that serves as an elder, his heart must be in the right way. But number two, let's consider his home. Consider with me, if you will, five characteristics and qualifications of the home that elder is to have. Of course, he is to be the husband of one wife, and that's enough said about that. He can't have two wives. Must be the husband of one wife. A woman cannot serve as an elder. If she does, she has to be the husband of one wife. And if she's the husband, there's a greater problem. Elder must be hospitable. Must be generous to his guest. Manages his family well. A definition that is so thorough when we look at the next couple. Children that are to be in obedience. Children that are to be believers or faithful. The word faithful there would parallel with one who is a Christian. Children who are believing children. They are in obedience unto Him. They are in obedience or subjection or insubordinate unto Him. He must manage his family well. We know that from chapter 3 and verse 4. When we look at that thought of managing his family or his household well, it's an idea of being at the head, to rule, to direct, or to be over. I realize that we cannot do justice with every individual qualification tonight, but I do want to look at some in a broad sense. As we noted moments ago, with his heart, he has to desire the work. Let's notice here on his home. Let's address a question straight up, and let me be very honest. Kevin stated I went to the Nashville School of Preaching. I'm 49 years old. All I've ever known is the Church of Christ. Let me say this. Whenever there is a discussion of elders, without fail in my years in the Church of Christ, all my life, there's more issue dealing with his children than any other qualification that's listed. And they all should be evenly looked at. First of all, he must manage his family well. He must handle his own household. He must rule and be head over it. Let's just say that there is a man who serves as an elder, and he has reared his children, and he manages his household well, and his children are subordinate to him, and they are also ones who are faithful. They grow, they move away, and when they move away, 5, 6, 10 years down the road, one child leaves the Lord's church and becomes unfaithful. Did that man fail? The answer to that would be no. That child made a decision. That is that child's household. That elder does not have the authority to rule over another man's household. Here, try this parallel in two ways. When I married Renita, according to Genesis chapter 2, I left my father and my mother, and I cleaved unto my wife, and we became one flesh. Ray Archie was as fine a daddy as I would ever want, but Ray Archie did not run my household. Are you with me? My father-in-law is an elder in the church and one of the finest men I've ever known. Have we got that on tape, brother? Good, thank you. Thank you. 163 Pauline Drive, Dayton, Tennessee. And anyway, he is one of the finest men that I know, but he does not run our household. I run that household. Men are to be the head over their household, serving in the manner of Jesus Christ as He is the head of the church, Ephesians 5:22 and following. However, I have known good, faithful men that from their heart and viewpoint say, Jeff, in all good conscience, I can't lead knowing that. And that is a decision that man makes, and I applaud him when he does so. But did he have to? Not according to as we research the Scriptures and see why. Because an elder is to manage his own household well, not someone else's. If he can't manage his household, then how can he manage the church of God as the Scriptures teach us in 1 Timothy 3? He must have a good home life. Next, let's look at his habits. Of the qualifications, the 23, there are 10 that deal with the habits of this man. How does he conduct himself? How does he go? He needs to be one who is above reproach or blameless, as in Titus chapter 1, verse 6. That means that his integrity cannot be held to account, or rather, as he's or called to account. He's not open to censure. He has good integrity. He is above reproach. Stop and think with me for a moment. Do you know before a man's name is placed before the congregation to serve as an elder, do you know this is the reason right here? That he will not be called into account. We always state if somebody has objection to this man serving, but by the time his name is put up, think about it. There should not be an objection. Our elders at Eastside do things a little differently. They will not ask the congregation to submit us a lot of names of who you want to see serve as elders and deacons. They do not do that. They respect congregations that do it that way, but they do not. Here's what they told me when I went there. They said, Jeff, we are the elders. We are the shepherds. We are over this flock. We should know our men and our women. And if there are those that people will say, we'd like to see so-and-so serve as an elder, we just ask them to come to us in a very private way and tell us. And then we will ask them why. And then we will sit down and we will look at that man in light of those qualifications. We will talk to him. We will see if he desires it. We go from there. That is probably months before the elders would put a name before our congregation. And over a year and a half, almost 2 years ago now, one of the men was put forth to serve as an elder. Congregation of over 300 people. Not one objection. Not one. Because our elders did their homework before they put his name forward. A month ago, we appointed 3 deacons. Not one objection. The elders did their homework. They looked at those men and they talked with them diligently about the work and what they were to do. You see, this man, he should be above reproach and blameless. He must be sober or within self-control. Not given to wine or addicted to wine. He must be patient, forbear, not violent, not toned to fits of anger, flying off the handle. This man has to have these habits that are of necessity in order to shepherd the sheep. We continue this thought. He can't be, along that line, overbearing. He can't be lording over the flock. He can't be self-pleasing. There is no room, no matter how much we joke about it, and we probably do well not to joke about it, there is no room in the eldership in any congregation for there to be an head elder. It is an eldership, or elders, plural, and they labor together. I love to think about the next 3 of how he's not to be a lover of money, not covetous, not greedy, or given to filthy lucre, as Titus chapter 1 and verse 7 brings forth. He's not to be one that is greedy who wishes to hold on to money. He must be a steward of what God has given him. He must be willing to make sure the gospel is preached and to carry this on. He must have a good reputation with outsiders. He must have one, not a man who's persecuted for righteousness' sake, but what is his reputation? How is he perceived outside of the church? Do you think that an elder can reach out to individuals in the community who know that that man has a reputation that should not, that's not as good? You see, this man must meet these God-desired qualifications, the habits that are there. The 4th H I called it is he must be one who is holding. And I'm going to borrow from Titus 1 in verse 9 concerning holding fast the faithful word, or in other words, able to teach. He must be skillful in his teaching. He must have that knowledge and convey the knowledge, and he must be a superintendent of the teaching. Now keep that one in mind as we look at another qualification of chapter 3 and verse 2. He must be vigilant. He must be awake. He must be watchful. He must be cautious. That means he has to be on guard. As Jesus said in Matthew 7, verses 15 and following, he has to look for those wolves that may be in sheep's clothing. He has to know what is coming among him. Before there are folks that will identify with the Eastside Church of Christ, our elders ask to meet with them. Now, sometimes it can be intimidating sitting down with 5 men that you really don't know that well. But yet, when people do so, they come away thankful for it. In a congregation our size, it's a joy that people can say, "My elders know me, and I know my elders." There was one gentleman decided to attend another congregation. He said, "That's unscriptural, for elders will meet with members of the church." Brethren, it's just as unscriptural as 1 John 4 and verse 1 in trying the spirits, and it's just as unscriptural as Acts chapter 20, 28 through 32. Elders need to know the sheep, and they need to know who's coming among the flock. That's the charge of a shepherd. They must be watchful. They must be ready. They must love what is good. They must be just, upright in their judgments, to make the right calls and decisions. 23 qualifications we've looked at. Ladies and gentlemen, tell me the work of the elder is a serious work. Indeed it is. They rise up, they make certain that they take care of the flock and what is there. When God brings forth these desires, the God's desire of these qualifications, He brings forth these 23 we should consider. Now, have we done justice to all of them tonight? No, because of the time restraint that we have, if you will. We don't have time to look at them all in depth. However, before you appoint elders, or even within a study of church leadership, we should look carefully at the qualifications of elders little by little and know them very well so that we can encourage those who desire to serve and to carry through God's desire for elders. Number 2, let's consider the application. Tonight I want us to consider from Titus chapter 1, verses 10 through 16, and we're going to look at that a little bit more in depth in a moment, but also Acts 20, 28 through 32. Sometimes I believe we would do well if we could understand the work of the elder and what the elder is to do. The elders are men that meet qualifications, but they are men that must put forth an application or apply what they do. I simply find it's easier to break this down into three parts. Number one, the elders, first of all, must take heed unto themselves. That's some of the first words that Paul told the elders at Ephesus. Take heed unto yourselves and unto all the flock. We're going to look at that one in a moment. An elder must take heed of himself. Think about it for a moment. Did not an elder take heed of himself before he became an elder? When we looked at his heart, his home, his habits, and the holding, did we not look at that elder who took heed unto himself? And he must look at himself carefully and consider himself first and foremost. The Hugheses are with us tonight. We were blessed to travel with them over to Egypt and Israel back the first part of the year. Had a wonderful trip with them. We stayed on an airplane what seemed to be for 7.5 days. Those airplane seats get smaller, Brother Kevin. But you know, I've never been on a flight to where they stood up and they go over all the guidelines. I've often wondered why they warn us of exits. I'm not going to take an exit at 30,000 feet in the air, but they have to do it. But you'll notice if you've ever flown on an airplane, one of the first things they will tell you is, if the cabin at any time fails to maintain proper oxygen pressure, a oxygen mask will fall down from above you. Please take the oxygen mask, pull it very firmly, put it on your face and over, and then in turn assist children or people that need help. I believe first and foremost that elders need to put on that mask of prayer, of the Word, and tend to themselves first before they strive to tend to the flock for their spiritual well-being. Why is that? It's God's desire. You see, it's not a matter that they're lords over God's heritage. They're examples to the flock, and they have to be the right example in order to go forward. They need to take heed to themselves, and if you recall, Paul told them why. In Acts 20, about verse 29, he said, of your own selves shall men arise, speaking perverse things. To the elders at Ephesus, take care of yourself. You know, interestingly enough, the first departure from the New Testament pattern happened to be by elders. One elder comes out of this area, one elder from this area, then one elder comes from all those. That was the beginning of Catholicism, my friends. The Apostle Paul said you've got to take heed to yourself. Elders need to look at their lives. They need to be stronger. They need to make sure the mask is on tight before they help us to breathe. That's God's desire that helps that man to be the best that he can be. So then number two, in his application, he can take heed to the flock. Once again, we go to Acts 20 and verse 28, but even Peter in 1 Peter 5 and verse 2 taught that as an elder to feed the flock of God. Overseeing a flock and tending to it, let's look at this thought of taking heed. When you get researching all of this, elders are to oversee. They are to watch. They are to protect the flock. In Acts 20, 29 through 31, Paul teaches there how they are to guard against error. They keep the wolves away from the sheep. They're able to oversee, to watch, to make sure things are well. They will look out for their sheep, just like a shepherd does. If you ever have opportunity, it's a book, I believe it's out of print, but you can probably find it at many used bookstores. Philip Yancey, A Shepherd Looks at the 23rd Psalm. Writing that from a viewpoint of his life as a literal shepherd. And I love to read when he takes the 23rd Psalm and he shows why it's so important. Thy rod and thy staff shall comfort me. The staff would guide the good sheep along. But that shepherd could take that rod in precision, throw it, and take out anything that would damage the sheep. Like a wolf. He could throw that thing with precision and take a wolf right out. You see, there's where our elders come in to protect us. They look out for us. They visit. They make sure to see the sheep. They're ones who organize and they govern. Years ago, when it was advocated that elders' authority is only by example, I submit to you, dear friends, they were not advocating God's desire. They were advocating man's desire. I heard of an elder, or a preacher one time, that said elders did not have authority. And they shared with him that they do have authority, and they dismissed him for teaching such garbage. And that's exactly what they should have done. Matter of fact, I'll go a little further. I am convinced, through our challenges of the 60s, through the crossroadism of the 70s, through the liberalism within the 80s, through the jubilees of the 90s, if solid, sound elderships like this one here at East End would have stood up and said, that's not coming in and you're not going out to it, all of those things would have died a quicker death than what they did. Elders can cease the struggles among their flock. They take heed to themselves. They make sure they're God's men and they're ready. They take heed to that flock. This may be a little hard to read because, to tell you the truth, I can see it right there. Let me turn around here. Can you hear me all right? Because I'm going to have to turn around and read it back. What happened to my background? You see what happens? East Tennessee background, brought it to Middle Tennessee, lost it over the mountain in Dunlap. Earl Trimble, in an article called Elders, Back to the Defender, back in February of 97, loved this. This man is an elder. Love what he said. If every man who serves a congregation as one of its elders would emphasize the role of a good shepherd who knows the flock and who is known by them, he would find his efforts to be of optimum effectiveness. When an elder is hospitable and continually has families in his home and likewise is regularly in their homes, he finds that most all other aspects of the work pretty well fall in line. By adopting the attributes of the Good Shepherd as pictured by Jesus in John chapter 10, his service as an elder is greatly enhanced. I loved what Brother Trimble had to say. It's a matter of being able to visit, to look out for, and to do that. Imagine with me for just a moment that your four beloved elders here sat down together tomorrow afternoon and said, let's take a look at our directory. Let's take a look at our members here. And you take a look at the members, you find four families who are struggling spiritually. And so either Monday, Tuesday, or Thursday night, the four elders say, I'll take this one, I'll take this one, I'll take that one, I'll take this one. And you start shepherding. Then the next week, they find four more. And the next week, they find four more. Imagine the impact of elders that will be shepherding their sheep as they take heed to the flock to help them along and to encourage them and simply carry through God's desire. Here's the third thing. Elders are to take heed unto the Word. That brings us now to Titus chapter 1, 10 through 16 as they deal with some individuals who need to be addressed. Number one, stop the talkers. Verses 10 through 12, stop the talkers. They're unruly, they're vain or empty, they're deceptive, they're lying. They will go out from us, but they were never of us, just like the one that would be called the Antichrist in 1 John 2:18 of that spirit going on. In 2 John 9:11, those that would wish to go and to teach other things other than the doctrine of Christ. Elders are to stop the talkers. So many times things happen because people talk too much. Secondly, steer them toward the truth. That's verses 13 and 14. Rebuke them sharply. What's the aim? That they may be sound in the faith. Not giving heed to Jewish fables and commandments of men that turn from the truth. Steer them away from the commandments of men and steer them toward the truth. That they cannot deal with the things, or if they're going to talk, let them talk about what is good. And then when necessary, separate them when necessary. Separate is verses 15 and 16. The things that are pure, but what's undefiled and unbelieving is nothing pure. Separate. A shepherd sees a sickly sheep. He will take that sheep and he will give it the attention it needs not to affect the other sheep within the flock. There are those that may have to be separated when necessary. They may need withdrawn from. 2 Timothy or 2 Thessalonians 3 and verse 6, 1 Corinthians 5, 9 and following, as well as Romans 16 and 17. Matters of separating, withdrawing, marking, making sure that the sheep remain safe within the flock. Now, when you take the application of elders and you put them into these three areas, it pretty well takes care of all the rest. When they take heed to themselves and continue to be the man God desires, and then they take heed to the flock to make sure that the flock is urged on toward heaven, and when they're able to take heed to the Word and to stop those that would create problem, to steer them to the truth, and if not, separate them away. Beloved, you see the work of an elder. You see what elders are to be about. Sometimes, I think over the years, we've missed it in an honest way. Our elders, in many ways, become deacons. They carry through a lot of physical work. Our deacons are not carrying through what they should. And God forbid, but we become somewhat where the preacher has become the pastor doing the work of the elders. I've seen a great change in that. Had lunch with a man the other day who is a retired Church of God minister. He said, "Jeff, I know it's busy pastoring a church." And I said, "Let me tell you what's so neat about it. I don't pastor the church." I said, "I have five elders that do the pastoring, that do the shepherding, that do the overseeing. I get to do the preaching, the ministering, the evangelizing." He said, "You know, Jeff, of all my years, I got to looking when I'd be working hard one week." And he said, "You know, I can't find the way that we do it in the Bible." He said, "I think you all got it the right way." Beloved, when it works with God's desire, it happens. Several years ago, an elder friend of mine, I said, "How you doing, Doug?" He said, "Jeff, we're doing pretty good." He said, "But we could be about our work better if we just were not constantly putting out little fires." He said, "We're trying to focus on our work as an elder, and we get called that children are coming into the nursery who are too big. They bring that to us. All they got to do is run them out." That's so true. Let's try something tonight. Why don't we take a look at this? We're good with the qualifications of elders. Yes, sir. He's got to meet it. We look at the application of elders. That's right. Elders need to be doing their work. But let me tell you where the challenge comes in. God's desire for qualifications and God's desire for application, let me tell you what else is important. God's desire for the congregation to do what it should do. 1 Thessalonians 5, 12 and 13 we'll look at in just a moment. But now I want to say, congregation, if you want your elders to be the best they can be, here's what we do. Number one, we respect and we honor our elders. Consider now, if you will, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, 12 and 13. And I want to look at 1 Timothy 5, 17 as well. You'll notice in both of these texts, you will see words placed in parentheses. That I placed them there for explanation. We look at 1 Thessalonians 5, 12 and 13 by itself. "And we beseech you, brethren, to know them which labor among you and are over you in the Lord, and admonish you, and to esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake, and be at peace among yourselves." There is no doubt there. Paul is referring to elders because of the rule that they have. Timothy in 1 Timothy 5, 17, "Let the elders that rule well be counted worthy of double honor, especially they that labor in the word and doctrine." Consider with me. "And we beseech you, brethren." He's writing to the church at Thessalonica to know. In other words, appreciate. Respect your elders. Know them which labor. That's a strong word, meaning more than work, but one who is diligent and is a hard worker. Until you walk in the shoes of elders and until you sit in the conference rooms with them, you don't know of the weight they have in their lives and hearts. You don't know. Well, why? You don't know. Well, I can't understand. You don't know till you walked it. They are over you in the Lord. They have a charge. Kevin, we have a charge. 2 Timothy 4:2, Ralph, we have a charge to preach the Word. Elders have a charge to oversee, to take heed to their own lives and to your lives. They are there to admonish us. That means it may instruct and it may warn us. An admonition can be one of an instruction and an admonition can be one to warn us. We esteem them very highly. Now look at the end part of verse 13. And be at or live in peace among yourselves. When you let God's desire work for qualification and application, bring it to the congregation. Let the elders that rule, they lead, they attend to, let them be worthy of that double honor. Respect and honor your elders. Number two, or let's build on this a little bit rather. Elders are not whipping boys to log complaints to. I was blessed tonight to enjoy a nice supper over at the Keys. All four of your elders and their wives were there. Not one of their vehicles they pulled up with had a license plate that said, "I am East End's whipping boy." Sometimes elders receive more complaints than they do compliments. Nothing's ever right. Some things we would do well to live with. I'm going to be done in a few minutes. I've lived without this air conditioner on for about 30 and I can hang with it longer. I'm not going to bring that to the elders' attention. Now, the deacon that's in charge of it, I'm going to pray for him tonight. Folks, I'm not kidding you. I'm cooking in this place. I mean, folks, it is hot in here. It is cooking. I guarantee you there's going to be one sister come out that door. She's going to be 73 years of age. She's going to look at me and she says, "Sweetie, I was comfortable that old time." And I'm going to say, "Yes, ma'am, I'm sorry." Let your elders know about problems you have. But talk to all of them at one time. Don't you dare pull an elder off in a corner and start having prayer meeting with him and bless him out over something. They love you and they're in charge of your soul. Talk to all of them at once. And elders, let the members know. If you tell me, I'm going to tell the other three. Beloved, talking to the wrong person never gets a right answer. Have you ever had people come talk to you about something? And you know all they want to do, bless their sweetheart, all they want to do is gripe about it and they don't want you to fix it? I have one question I love to ask in conversation. What can I do to help? When I ask it one time, I know where the conversation is going to go. If they say, "Jeff, there's nothing you can do to help," and they keep on a roll, I let them talk. One time. Life is too short, eternity is too long, hell's too hot, and heaven's too glorious to sit around and constantly hear complaints and problems. If you got a problem, fix it and get on with life, because guess what? There's going to be another one right around the corner. If it's hungry, you feed it. If it needs change, you change it. If it needs burped, you pick it up and put it on your shoulder and you move on with life. We've got the greatest plan in the world, and God's desire says, here is the church. Church, let's respect and love our elders. Number two, love and protect them. Whatsoever you would that men do to you, do you also unto them. Matthew 7:12. You know something? We would be in a whole lot sweeter world if we just simply lived by the golden rule, would we not? Against an elder receive not an accusation, but before two or three witnesses. 1 Timothy 5:19. Also, be patient with elders. Be thankful for an eldership that moves slowly when they need to. There may be more there than you know. Yes, sometimes elders move slow. But there may be more there than I know. Sometimes elders move fast. There may be more there than I know. Sometimes they move a little faster than I wish. Sometimes they move a little slower than I wish. But aren't you thankful we don't have the pastor system as denominationalism does, to where one man can just drive it through? Can sometimes elders move faster? Yes. Can elders move slower? Yes. May I ask you a question? How perfect do you live? Do you realize you are the flock this eldership is overseeing? Now, maybe if we moved a little faster when we should, or if we moved a little slower than we should, you think that might help the elders a little bit? One time one of my elders looked at me and said, "Jeff, I know we don't move as fast as you wish we would sometimes." I said, "Well, in some things, yes, I wish you would move along, but in some things, I'm thankful overall that you don't." Respect and honor your elders. We got to go hurriedly. Kevin gave me 2 hours of subject tonight, but bear with me. I'm going home after a while, so will you. Number two, remember them. Remember your elders. Remember, they have God-given authority. That's God's desire. Hebrews 13:7. Hebrews 13:17. They have that rule. They do so with joy and not with grief, for it would be unprofitable to us if they did otherwise. We are to remember them. We are to follow their faith. I would submit to you also in remembering them, remember their God-given authority in matters of expediency. This is where we get a lot of times sideways. Expediency, expedient, the quality of being expedient or advantageous, fitness or suitableness to effect a purpose intended, adapt to self-interest, desirableness, advantage, advisability. Look at the next definition of Thayer. With a reference to the subject, to bear together, or at the same time to carry with others, to collect or contribute in order to help or be profitable. There are times elders will make a decision that's not a matter of Scripture. Let me give you one of an illustration. A few months ago, we remodeled our auditorium. We had to use a middle school, an area middle school auditorium, while we were going through our remodeling. We were going to meet at the middle school on Wednesday night and have one huge combined class. I submitted to the elders, why don't we just, instead of meeting in the auditorium as we always do, let's arrive and why don't we just go directly to our classes at Eastside. If you set the chairs upright in the fellowship hall, we can get 100 to 110 people in there, and that would be about the size of the adult class that would meet in the auditorium. Next thing I know, we was meeting both Wednesday nights at Lake Forest Middle School. Talking to one of my elders one day, I said, "Just curious. I'm with you, but why?" He said, "Jeff, when we looked at it, look at our fellowship hall." He said, "We have an exit that goes out upstairs, but generally you have one main exit. And just in case something would have happened, what about some of our older folks that can't move as fast?" I said, "Marvin," it was Marvin, I said, "Marvin, thank you." You see, this old country boy didn't quite think things through. But that wasn't my purpose for being there, Greg. It was a suggestion. But the elders looked it through. Thank you, brethren. You see, in an air of expediency or a thought of an opinion, the elders may decide, let's go this way. Ask yourself one question. Is it violating Scripture? If it doesn't, you move onward. You respect, you honor them, you remember them, and I would submit to to remember them in prayer. How often do you pray for your elders? How often do you pray for these men? I can answer that with me, not enough. Remember them in prayer. Before Paul departed from those elders at Ephesus, or the elders from Ephesus in Acts chapter 20, 35 and 36, the Bible tells us he kneeled down and he prayed with them all. Remember them in prayer. Let's move on. Rely on your elders. Isn't that what James said in James 5 and verse 14? That if any were sick among you, let him call for the elders of the church and let them pray over him, anointing him with oil in the name of the Lord? Did not he ask to call on them when there is sickness, either physical or spiritual? Usually what do? We call the preacher. But we're told to call the elders of the church. Now, if folks call my elders, elders are going to call and let me know. Sometimes somebody's sick, call the preacher. James said, call the elder. You ever call the elders? The anointing oil over him in the name of the Lord, James goes on to tell us that the prayer of the faith will save the sick. It's not the oil that you put on him. That can go to a matter of the culture at that time. A soothing and ease. The emphasis there is to call on those elders. To let them know. Call on an elder for advice. Sit down and talk with your elders sometimes. A little over 2 years ago, lost daddy to lung cancer. Going back and forth to Nashville, tending to daddy and helping out there where I could. One afternoon, I meet with my elders as I do monthly, and I sat down with them, and I'll never forget, Brother Kyle looked at me and said, how's your dad doing, Jeff? And I said, well, daddy's doing pretty good. And then I got to talking, and then I broke down and I started crying. And I said, brethren, would you pray with me? I walked out of that room. I was ready to go after Moby Dick in a rowboat, folks. When an elder, when a preacher walks out of the room and his elders have prayed for him to keep him pressing onward and doing the work of the Lord, you can't stop that preacher. We sat down and we had prayer together. This eldership at East End wants nothing more than to help you and your family get to heaven. That's why we need to rely on them. That's why when we open up Titus chapter 1, 5 through 16, God's desire, He gives us those qualifications. He gives us that application to the elders. Then He tells the congregation, you need to take care of your elders. I'm going to depart tonight with a challenge to you. You may do this. If you do, God bless you. But I want to issue a challenge to you. You may not be able to do it by the end of the year. But I want you to plan on doing it and try to get it done before next April the 1st. Here's what I want you to do. If you don't do it already, I want you to have an appreciation luncheon for your elders and their wives. Elders' wives, listen to me. For that day, don't cook. Don't cook. Don't make your husband cook. One day, appreciate your elders and their wives. Have a luncheon for them. Take time and thank them for what they do. Not only that, but sit down and write them something personal of what they have meant to you over the years. When God's desire is met with qualifications and elders are able to put forth the application and the congregation comes forth with God's desire, is that not what we stand and preach? That we be just like the church we read of in the New Testament. It's able to reach souls, to stand for truth, to be a beacon in this world. That's God's desire. God has many desires. He tells them what He expects of us through His book. One desire, He says in 1 Timothy 2 and verse 4, that He would have all men to be saved and to come to a knowledge of the truth. Tonight, I know, Saturday night assembly, I dare say the vast majority here are probably Christians. Have I dealt with something tonight that maybe has affected you and your attitude? Maybe you're looking at that and you're saying, I can be better in the congregation here. I can be a better encourager. But first, I need to start with myself. Do you need to come forward tonight and confess sins that we can pray with you and pray for you? That you be restored to the faith, or pray that you be strengthened to continue onward. And a number this size, there's one tonight who's thinking about becoming a Christian. Maybe it's something Kevin said Sunday or Cliff said last night. You've thought about it all day. And you're thinking, man, for me to be part of this congregation, I'm ready to move on my faith, repent of my sins, confess Jesus as the Son of God. Tonight you can be buried with Him in the waters of baptism, to have your sins washed away and to be added to the church. That's God's desire for you. God's desire for you and I tonight is that we be saved.